One of the television shows I watched growing up was Star Trek. And Star Trek, if you're not familiar with it, is this science fiction story set on the Starship Enterprise as it travels through the galaxy exploring strange new worlds. And so on the Starship Enterprise is a crew. There's James T. Kirk, the captain. There's Spock, the half-human, half-Vulcan, who's the first officer and science officer. There's Bones McCoy, the medical officer. There's Scotty, the engineer. There's Uhura, the communications officer. Sulu, the helmsman. And Chekhov, the navigator. And this crew travels around. And if you watch the show for a little while, and I'm talking about the original series, there have been numerous spin-offs of Star Trek over the years. And the original series, in fact, through all of them, there's little tropes, little things that kind of occur again and again, and you kind of can predict when things happen. You think, oh, I know what's going to happen. And one of them was so much of kind of this recurring thing that someone actually put it into a novel. And that's the story of the red shirts. And so let me tell you a little about, so on the Enterprise, the crew wore different colored shirts, and there were the blue shirts and the gold shirts and the red shirts, and they had these various missions they would go on. And oftentimes as they were traveling, one of the common things that would happen in an episode was they would find a planet and they would send what they would call an away team, a group of people that would leave the starship and travel down to the planet. And it was usually some of the primary characters. It was McCoy or Kirk or some of them. But occasionally in an episode, you'd see this random character wearing a red shirt who would join the crew, one of the security officers. And after watching the show a few times, you got to know this, that if a red shirt joined the crew going down to a planet, that red shirt was probably not going to make it back to the ship. Because that was the guy who was going to be crushed by the monster or sucked up into the black hole or whatever incident was going to happen. And so there were the red shirts. And it was just this thing like, oh, there's it. That guy's going to die. I mean, you see him like, he joins the away team and you know that guy's going to die. And so you're thinking about that. And so when we gathered together to play Star Trek with my friends and stuff, nobody volunteered to be the red shirt. And when you get together and you'd start playing, and I was like, oh, I want to be Kirk, I want to be McCoy, I want to be Scotty. No one jumped up and said, hey, can I be a red shirt? And it's the same way in a lot of other things. If we were playing Star Wars, everybody wanted to be Luke or Han. Nobody wanted to be Rebel Pilot number 3. And you think about it, when whatever kinds of games you played, whatever sort of things you did, if you were acting out sports things or if you were reliving stories, people wanted to be the princess or the prince or the king. They wanted to be the one who slayed the dragon, not the one who got eaten by the dragon. We wanted to be the main characters in the story. We wanted to be the people of importance. We wanted to be the ones that everyone was paying attention to. And it's not so different in the church sometimes. Everybody wants to be the captain or the first officer. We don't like being those things, and that's the way it's been, not only today, but way back. And so we're going to take a journey back to the city of Corinth and see what happened in the city of Corinth, because they were experiencing the same sort of problem. And so the city of Corinth sits at the southern end of modern-day Greece. And there's an area of Greece called the Peloponnese, which is this giant, almost looks like an island, but it's attached by a tiny isthmus, connects it to the mainland. And the city of Corinth sits on that little isthmus. And so it was at the center of trade, and because of where it was located, it was a city that was a wealthy city. Travel came through there. There was a series of games called the Isthmian Games, which rivaled the Olympic Games in terms of tourism and people coming there to Corinth to see these games. And so the people there grew wealthy. It had become a Roman colony in 44 BC, and so the Romans lived there. It was a place where status was important. It was a place where success was valued, where everyone looked up and said, oh, these are the kind of people, and the successful people, the people who had become rich through trading, become rich for those things. It was a city that had everything. It had the water there. It was a defensible area. It had natural resources. And so in some ways, the city of Corinth was not unlike the United States today. A place that had everything. And it was rich in natural resources. It was a place that valued success. Think about how we value success in today's world. That we look and we say, oh, look at that person. He's such a success. We often don't pay so much attention to their character or to the little things in their life, but what we value is how well they've done in life, how much money they've made, how many books they've sold, how many schools they've built. Whatever it is that they do, we revolve and we value, we place a high importance on success. And that was the city of Corinth. It was a place where there was self-promotion and self-congratulation. But most of all, where the people who were successful were the ones who were looked up to. And everybody wanted to be successful. And those who weren't successful were looked down on. And so into the city of Corinth comes a man named Paul. Paul was a follower of Jesus, and he was traveling around and telling people about Jesus and this incredible message of the cross, that God had sent his son Jesus to die for people and to set them free. And so he comes and he shares this message, and out of this preaching and this teaching in the city of Corinth, there's a small group of followers of Jesus, gathers and begins to worship, and Paul, after a while of establishing them, does what he does and he moves on to the next city. But then Paul hears news of what's going on in Corinth. He hears news of what's happening there, because what's happened there is what happens so often. Is we join and we follow Jesus, and these people started following Jesus, but there were still parts of that old self that were left. There were still parts of their old life that hadn't gone away completely. There was still the influence from all that culture around them. Because though they had decided to follow Jesus, all those same patterns of placing a value on certain things over others still was a part of the way they lived. And so they were having problems. So Paul writes a letter. What we know is 1 Corinthians. And he writes this letter to them to help them understand what life in Jesus looks like. And he goes on and he talks about lots of different things. And then he comes to this part we read in chapter 12. And he's addressing this issue of spiritual gifts, which is a really big topic, and we can spend a long time on that. But spiritual gifts are essentially God's equipping power in people to enable them to do things they couldn't do on their own. Special abilities. It might be teaching. It might be preaching. It might be speaking in tongues. It might be the power of healing. It might be some sort of gift. But God has put gifts in these people to allow them to do things. But what's been happening is, in this church in Corinth, is they've been looking and they've been saying, well, this gift is a lot more flashy. This gift is a lot more powerful. This is a gift that has more power. And so certain gifts were being elevated over others. And so if you had the gift of tongues, maybe, then you were up on the pedestal here. But if you had this other gift, maybe of service, you were just a red shirt. You didn't count so much. And so they're battling that. And Paul is trying to write them to help them understand what that's all about. And I want to think about this idea of spiritual gifts, but I want to broaden it out a little bit more. Because what Paul is getting at is a central idea, is that every single person in the church has value, and every person matters. So we're talking in a series right now about what we call our Covenant for Christian Community. And it's printed on the insert in your bulletin there. And this is something we developed a few years ago, a way to say, this is how we want to live a life. It's not everything the Bible teaches us, but it says that this is part of what we are. And so it starts off and says, as a body of people brought together by the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ, we are called to live as a compelling community of servants. By God's grace and truth, empowered by the Holy Spirit, we commit to a life of remarkable love. And this is the part I want to focus on today. Recognizing every person's value as a member of the body of Christ. And so let's hear what Paul has to say. So Paul says, as Rick read earlier, just as a body, the one has many parts, but all its parts form one body, so it is with Christ. For we were all baptized by one Spirit so as to form one body, whether Jews or Gentiles, slave or free, and we are all given the one Spirit to drink. Even so, the body is not made up of one part, but of many. So Paul starts off and sets the stage. He says, look, it's all different parts, but it's one body. And it's not one body because of something we've done. It's not as if we all got together and said, hey, we should all be one. It's something that God has done. But all the parts form one body. So do they. For we were all baptized by one Spirit to form one body. If you go up a little farther in chapter 12, it's basically saying God has done all this. God brought all these disparate parts, all these different unique parts, all these different people, all these different unique gifts, and he puts us all together. God does that. We don't do that. And then Paul starts to say, but sometimes we start to think in different ways. And so first of all, he looks to some people and he says, but some of us can be tempted to feel, maybe we aren't as important. Maybe our gifts aren't as valuable. Maybe our contribution to the body isn't so much. So Paul says to them, he says, well, now if the foot should say, because I'm not a hand, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. And if the ear should say, because I am not an eye, I do not belong to the body, it would not for that reason stop being part of the body. He's saying, look, Dude, you are a particular part. You can't look and say, well, I wish I were that part. Because what would happen then? If the whole body were an eye, where would the sense of hearing be? If the whole body were an ear, where would the sense of smell be? And so we sometimes come into church, we sit here and sometimes we look, and it's such a temptation to look and say, oh, I wish I had that gift. I wish I could be that person. I wish I could be doing what they're doing. What would it be like if we had a church filled with preachers? It'd be a really long Sunday, wouldn't it? Or what would be it like if we just had an entire church that's like, oh, we're all going to sing. Or if we had an entire church where we're all going to be Sunday school teachers. Or we had an entire church where, well, we're all going to be the people who clean up the kitchen. Or the whole church is somebody who cooks. Or the whole church is a person, people who sit in the nursery. It wouldn't work, would it? And so each and every part, Paul is saying, is each and every part has value. He's saying, be careful to not look around and say, well, I wish I were that part. Because what he's saying is God has made you a particular part for a reason. And God has placed you there, and you therefore have value. So in part, what he's saying to us is, sometimes when we look and say, well, I really don't do anything important. He said, no, you do have an important part to play. Because each and every single part is needed. Each and every part has value. And then he flips it around. He says, well, but sometimes the opposite happens. It's not that we see too little value in what we do. Sometimes what happens is we see too much value in what we do. We start to get an overinflated sense of ourselves. And it says, therefore, in verse 20, he says, the eye cannot say to the hand, I don't need you. And the head cannot say to the feet, I don't need you. On the contrary, those parts of the body that seem to be weaker are indispensable. In other words, we can't look around and say, well, we don't need that. I don't need you. Paul is saying, every part is there, and we have no right, no ability to look and say to another part, you have no value. Your part's a small part. We don't need you. All those minor characters that ran around on the Starship Enterprise, they all had a role to play. We never heard what they did, but the ship would not have run with just the 5 or 6 main characters. They all had a part to play. In the same way in the church, it can be tempting to look and just see the people who stand up on a platform on Sunday morning and say, oh, those are the people that matter. And it might be tempting for those who are standing on the platform to think, well, we don't need all those other people out there. But what Paul is reminding us is saying, no, every single part has value. Every single part matters. And that's the same thing that happens in our culture. There's this temptation to look and say, not every part is valuable. Not everything matters. And it's been a part of the church's culture for such a long time. I was thinking about it even in terms of, and the way we do that isn't just in terms of spiritual gifts. It's so many other ways that we look and we start to value certain people over others based on things. This weekend, our nation recognizes the work of Martin Luther King Jr. We think about the ways in which the church in the United States has valued certain people over others based on the color of their skin. That in the early days of the United States, as we were trading in human beings from another country and bringing from another continent and bringing them here to the United States, when they were initially bringing slaves to the United States, the Christians didn't even think them worthy of preaching the gospel to them because they believed they were less than human and did not have a soul. Later they began to say, well, no, but we want them to be able to hear the gospel because then they'll be more compliant. And so if we preach the gospel to them, we can teach them submission. But what the legislators did in places like Virginia was write into their legislature that a baptism did not change a person's status. So they would preach to these slaves, tell them about the good news of Jesus, which sets them free, but says, oh, by the way, if you accept Jesus, you're still a slave. You are still another person's property. We wrote it into our very own Constitution that said when we're tabulating and evaluating, voting, and counting for the United States, that the slaves only counted as 3/5 of a person. So to say that we recognize everyone's value simply wasn't true. Because if they only counted as 3/5, is that the same value as someone who counts as a full value? or women who had no value at that point. So we've written it into our nation that that's the way it was. We come to our nation today and we look around and we do the same thing. We count, and in churches we look and we value people in certain and different ways. We look, and sometimes in churches we value people based on how much money they have in their checkbook, don't we? We look and say, well, and I remember when I was in Texas and I was serving the National Guard, and I was talking with a soldier one Sunday, and he was talking about a church he had gone to. And he had become disillusioned with the church, because this is what happened that Sunday morning prior at the church he went to, which was a large church there in Dallas, and there are lots of really big churches down in Dallas. And what had happened was the pastor that morning had brought up onto the stage one of the players from the Dallas Cowboys. And the pastor said, oh, here's this player, and he's such a good man of God. And last week he gave $1 million to our ministry. And he wanted everybody to applaud him. And this soldier looked at me and said, what about everybody else? What about the person who gave five? Or the person who gave 20? Because that guy who gave a million was probably making 12, 13, 14 million dollars a year. And so to him, $1 million, which to many of us, most of us sitting here, $1 million, that's a lot of money. But in some sense, what that pastor had done was said, look at this guy. Look how much he gave. He has more value, because my guess is that pastor never brought someone up on stage and said, look, here's Carl. He gave $20 last week. Or this person gave $200. He had begun to value, and so we can sometimes begin to value money. In a church, we can sometimes begin to value education or learning. That we can look and we can say, well, that person knows the Bible so well. They can quote all these verses, and they can tell you the order of all the kings in the Bible, and they can tell you and they can explain these things to you. So obviously they're more important to our church. Sometimes in a church we can begin to value or devalue people based on their age. We can look at some of our kids and say, well, yeah, that's great. They're kind of cute and they come up here and they do fun things, but they're really not. I mean, when they grow up and they can really be contributing members of the church, that's when they're important. Or we can get to the other end of the spectrum. As people get a little bit older, we can say, well, you know, they used to be really useful around here. They used to do all kinds of things, but now they don't hear so well. They don't move so well. And so, you know, we just want to keep them happy. Maybe we don't even want to keep them happy, because they're not what's valuable anymore. They're not the ones who are contributing to the ministry anymore. They're just sort of there. It might be based on their personality style. We all have different personalities. We all have different ways of living and being. Some of us are extroverts. Some of us love being around people. We just want to come, and we look forward to Sunday morning. We want more time where we can sit and we can talk to people and move from table to table. We come back and we say, oh, that was so exciting to be around all those people and hear all those stories. And some of us are the exact opposite. We're talking to someone we don't know requires every bit of strength within us. We're being around people we don't know, or being a little uncomfortable. It just takes the energy out of us. And so in a church, and particularly in church, those of us labeled as introverts, in other words, those, and it doesn't mean we don't like people. It doesn't mean introverts don't like people. It just means that it requires more effort, that it takes more energy to be around people. But in church, sometimes there's an expectation that everybody should be an extrovert, that everybody should be happy and shaking everybody's hands and loving. It's like, oh, we want to be around people. And some of us who are not that way just want to be alone. But sometimes we place a higher value on one over the other, on the types of personalities that we have. And that's where Paul comes in and says, no, you can't say we don't need that person. You can't say I have more value because I'm this kind of person. The extrovert can't say to the introvert, I don't need you. The poor can't say to the rich, well, I don't matter because I'm not like that. The white can't say to the black, the old man can't say to the young person. It doesn't work that way in the body of Christ, because all have been put there. All are important and all matter. That every single person has value. Just as a body, though one has many parts, all that form one body, so it is with Christ. You were all baptized by one Spirit to form one body. That's the value we all have. We have all been baptized by God into this body, and we all have value. We can't look to another part and say, oh, I wish I were that. And we can't look to another part and say, I don't need you. But each and every part has value, and each and every part is needed. That's the incredible thing God has done. God has taken all of us with all our different gifts and all these different things and said, I'm going to put you together. I'm going to put you together and make you into something more than you were before. And I'm going to make you need each other. I'm going to make you need each other. And through that need of each other, you're going to learn things. You're going to learn things. When you have that person who's a little bit different, when you have those things, we all learn and we understand, and to understand the gospel of Jesus Christ even more. And so God has knit us all together into one body. God has done this. And this is the great work of God, that he's placed us all in one body. So if you're sitting there, you have value because God has called you into the body. And the person next to you has value because they were called to be a part of the body. Each and every person is someone that Jesus has died for. Each and every person is someone that God's Spirit lives and dwells within and brings to be a part of the body. And so we want to recognize that each and every person has value, and that value comes from God. That value comes from being loved by Jesus. And so as we get ready to sing our final song, this is going to be a challenge for those of you who don't like talking to other people, but I'm going to ask you to do this. What I want you to do is I want you to find three people who are not a part of your family, your biological family that you came with today. And I want you to find that person as we're standing up and we hear what he's saying. I want you to go to them and I simply want you to say this. You are important and we need you. You are important and we need you. And so we're going to do that. So we're going to just take a few minutes. So let's go ahead and stand and find three people and just look at them and say, you are important and we need you.
Important. Why'd you get up here?
I'm important.
You can hardly hear it.